This is CliffCentral.com.
All right, what is your take on reproductive genetics, testing DNA or designer babies?
Do it.
We've been touching on this recently on the show, so we decided to get an expert in to talk about this matter with us. Kim Hewlett's the CEO and the chief researcher at Next Biosciences and a South African Singularity University faculty member. This morning, she's going to share with us some advances in stem cell genetic research, which are unlocking solutions to medical challenges around the world. It's time for us to learn, rather than just foist our opinions on other people. So we thought we'd get the expert in, and we talked to Kim this morning. Hey, Kim, how are you?
I'm great, thanks, Gareth, and thanks for having me.
Thank you. Nice of you to come and join us. You would have seen we get very passionate about things here.
I can see that.
Soz. Just a little.
I'll promise you I'll keep you away from Gord for the course of the morning.
I am fascinated by this topic.
I'm a bit worried about you, Gord.
To be perfectly honest, though, this kind of thing fascinates me. I'm a layperson science enthusiast, and I'm really interested in it. I've been looking forward to this, so I will try not to be a
awesome.
Dick.
Awesome.
So let's just talk about this. First of all, what is your company, Next Biosciences? Tell me about that.
So Next Biosciences is a biotech company, and we are based in Midrand, and we're involved in stem cells, genetics, and biologics.
Can anyone come to you and say, listen, we want you to grow some stem cells, or we want you to figure out whether our genome has some weird sequencing in it? What kinds of services do you offer, and is it open to the public, or do you do stuff for medical companies?
So what we mainly involved in, we do umbilical cord blood stem cell storage for babies.
It's too late for me on that front.
Yeah, too late for you, but we can actually collect your fat, if you like, and store those stem cells for you.
You can collect mine.
I got spare. I'm going to get a big lot of storage.
I got spare fat for anyone who's O positive. Like, we could do, seriously, a province. So, hook them up.
So, what do you do with the fat?
Oh,
hang on. You harvest some of the fat, and then what? You get those adipose cells?
Yes, the mesenchymal stem cells, and then we bank and store those, and then for future potential medical use.
My understanding, which may be incorrect, but my understanding was that, you know, initially embryonic stem cells were the only sort of viable source, but now apparently we can get them from other places. Like, someone told me something about the nose. There's a tissue in the nose that produces stem cells. That may be wrong, but inform me if there are other sources in the body.
Gord's asking you to tell him because he knows nothing.
Yeah, and I'm saying, where can we get stem cells? Where can we get stem cells from an individual that's already a fully grown adult that doesn't involve embryos, if anywhere?
So stem cells are really resident in all your, you know, all your organs of the body, and the best place, the easiest place to collect them is at birth, because it's medical waste, normally just gets thrown away. But as an adult, the easiest way to collect is from your adipose tissue. It's got abundant form of stem cells, and they're quite versatile. There's quite a lot you can do with it. A lot of it's not yet clinically available.
And that's fat, essentially.
Yes, okay. Fat. Okay. Got great storage.
Adipose tissue, I know the term, but some of our listeners might not.
Excuse us.
So if you carry a lot of weight, you're quite advantageous. You got a lot of stem cells.
Okay, so you said for potential future use, because we haven't figured out exactly how to use those stem cells in the adipose tissue to grow perhaps new organs or to fix tissue that's been, you know, damaged in a burn victim, for example, that kind of thing.
Correct.
It can also be used to just, if the stem cells, as I understand it, are the place where the tissue regenerates, then those should be able to generate nerve tissue, muscle tissue.
Correct.
Glands and cells that do very peculiar functions in the body, all of them effectively.
No, that's correct. So there's lots of work going on, and I think the most common usage at the moment is an aesthetic surgery. So people are using fat and complementing it with the stem cells for reconstructing of breast, and for aesthetic purposes, youthful regeneration,
cartilage,
yes. Okay. Arthritis and cartilage regeneration. So there's a lot of that work going on.
Because I've heard it's really fantastic. A person I know, well, rather that I know of, had like a keyhole surgery on their rotator cuff, and had their whole gym, big gym enthusiast, had their whole, that whole mission. They couldn't lift anything because the rotators were just so gone, and it had keyhole on both rotators, and they'd been okay for a while and then gone again for a while. Totally couldn't do any more weightlifting, and had stem cell surgery in some other country, wealthy as hell this person, and could afford it, and apparently that fixed them. Like, their damaged joint was like, both joints after a series of stem cell treatments were good as new, and
I'm interested in how that works.
So mechanical damage, in other words, can be repaired.
There's a lot of work going on in that. I think for me, because we're working mainly in the preconception to post-birth market, I think the most fascinating thing for us is the stem cells you collect from the placenta.
Mm-hmm.
And they,
because as you said, otherwise it gets thrown away, so...
Yes, and these stem cells are like virgin cells. They're not, like in your body, they become aged. So it's these virgin stem cells, and there's a lot of work happening in that. And for instance, there's even a clinic that's been set up in the island of Bimini, and they're using these placental stem cells for longevity injections, and all the really wealthy and famous people are
going
there.
Where's Bimini?
Bimini is an island in the Bahamas.
Ooh,
yeah, sounds like a kick-ass place.
And people swear by these injections. Anyway, look, this is all... It's going into the future. And
GC reverse ages, so when he comes back from Bimini, he'll be an infant.
Yeah, I think he knows
someone
exactly
will have to
Bimini
hold
is.
Him by the microphone.
Like Benjamin Button.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. All right,
let's just talk for a minute about how big this whole genetic and biomedical business is in South Africa. I mean, you're not the only one, but I can't imagine there are that many because South Africa's fairly behind the curve in terms of world standards, right?
Yes and no. It depends.
We don't have enough rich people to be able to afford this stuff.
Oh, we have rich people.
Not enough to afford.
And they should damn well be paying for the medical care of everyone else, Gareth.
Just shut up. And please, can we have Kim answer this?
There are different aspects of genetics. So if I'm just broadly just explaining, there's like oncology genetics to test for if you've got predispositions for cancers. There is lifestyle genetics, so that's being genetically tested to see what is suitable for you in terms of nutrition and what drugs work for you, so all the lifestyle
So that's a
stuff.
Real thing, like different food genetically will... Because I've always been wondering if blood type dieting is bullshit or not. So like there's a genetic thing of like you're a person
Correct.
That can handle lactose, for example, better than someone
yes.
else.
So they are genetic, and they're genetic tests you can do with that. But I think the most important thing about genetic testing you understand is we're only just at the beginning of understanding what all the genes can do. So I almost like to say the race is on around the world to sequence as many genomes as you can, and then people are trying to work out which genes are responsible for which traits and which diseases. So we're still at the very early stages of that. So even if you do know your whole genetic makeup, it doesn't... You're still trying to figure out.
Yeah.
So you can see if there's a gene or not, or if it's active or not, but you might not know what it could potentially do.
Maybe we can start to zero in on where certain markers are located. And you know, you listen to people like Dr. Craig Venter, who's obviously one of the world's most preeminent fans of the genomic sequencing. This guy, he's kind of disappointed with the fact that the research hasn't delivered as much as it might.
Correct. So he sequenced, I don't know how many. I went to his lab in, I was there a few years ago, so I've had my whole genome sequenced. I was the 13th person.
Wow.
To have that done. And
worldwide or in SA?
Well, from Dr. Craig Venter.
Amazing.
And I mean, you get this thick file. There is just so much data. It's almost impossible to go through it. And there's a number of variants of unknown significance. They don't even know what it means. But in everyone, you have, you know, they just can't interpret all this
stuff. Did they discover some useful and pertinent information from yours?
I think the one thing that, you know, they told me I have got a predisposition to, I like sugar far too much and I should be careful because I'm predisposed to potentially diabetes. So it does make me aware of that.
You don't look like you're getting diabetic anytime.
Yeah, you look like you can handle a chocolate. Yeah, you look just fine.
But from him sequencing people, you know, they have picked up, you know, if you predispose and they've actually picked up like minor, well, they do complete body scans and that, and they picked up the beginnings of tumors. And his big thing is about early detection. If you can detect something early, then you got a chance of fixing it. So that's on... So let me just go back to the conversation on the other side. So there's various levels of genetic testing, and we're focusing here in South Africa at our laboratory on reproductive genetic testing. And that, to me, is the exciting part. So so people undergoing IVF, people have undergone IVF for fertility reasons.
Mm.
And what you can now do, you know, it was really the fertility doctor would just choose potluck. You just go choose a few embryos, put them in, and hope for the best. We can now test those embryos To actually see that they're healthy embryos. We do a high-level chromosome.
And you can check whether they're the most viable possible embryos?
So we do a screening test, and on that screening test is a chromosomal test. So we just check to see that it's high-level, so any missing or extra chromosomes.
Yeah, so you don't end up with Down syndrome kids and that
correct,
kind of thing.
Correct. And then if you transfer the healthy ones, then you've got a better chance of a successful pregnancy and not having a baby with a serious...
Because
genetic
I mean,
anomaly, yeah.
It's, we're taking for granted in this room, people understand that, like, from one set of parents, each embryo is as different as siblings would be. So you can pick for the ones with the better traits. And if you were to have a litter of 10 children, they wouldn't all be equally predisposed to the same problems just because the parents are the same.
That's correct. So where it's really going is, so that's where technology currently is, but where we are with parents, if you know you've got a serious history or a serious medical history of genetic disorders in your family, you can undergo carrier screening. We can assess the risk of you transferring one of those diseases onto your babies, and then you can decide, okay, look, we're going to undergo IVF. We can then do special testing on that embryo for a specific disease.
And find the ones that don't have the trait.
Correct. So you can actually out...
Even if they might be in the vast minority, even if it's like 1 in 10 that doesn't have the trait, you can find that
we
one.
Can find that embryo, and then that's the amazing embryo you can transfer.
And Kim, this is obviously the first step in the direction of what people have termed designer babies. And there's a lot of... There's a lot of made-up nonsense and bad press around this, that people think, oh, you're messing with God, you're messing with the way that nature intended things to be. And I mean, humans have been doing this for years. Yeah. There's no difference between this and choosing to have good nutrition while you're pregnant as a mother, or not drinking, for example, or any of these things. These are the things that you
and
try to do.
And trying to decide what time of year to have kids because, you know, the ones that are born earlier in the year have an advantage in primary school.
Correct.
It's all just little... but I mean...
I mean, we've been doing it for years, if you think about it.
Can we make some scary-ass chimeras and create an army of supervillains?
Slow down. Kim was going to... You were going to say?
No, you're absolutely right, Gareth. And in a way, we have been doing it for many years. Just think about people just going... Women wanting to get a sperm donor. You know, you get a menu and you go, well, this guy, well, he's super intelligent or
athletic,
he's got blue eyes.
Yeah, sure.
So we're kind of already doing that.
Good point.
And if you now... So the whole key point is... You already made embryos with your partner. They're yours genetically, completely. If you're now going to select out the ones with the disease-free, the ones you don't want to pass on for future generations.
What kind of cruel psychopath would want, if they could stop that, to allow it to happen? Isn't that the reverse argument?
That's exactly right.
People say, well, I don't think it's fair to give these kids a genetic advantage by choosing them and not allowing nature to make that decision.
But nature's just randomness. It's entropy by definition. It's like...
Nature's just made the embryos. So the point is we're not genetically changing anything. Those are your genetic embryos. They're related to you. So if
you're picking the best one.
Yeah, so if you've already got 10 and you choose the healthy ones.
If I ever decide to have a kid, I'm coming straight to your lab.
Yeah,
honestly. We're going to make it in the lab. We're not involving any nature or any other crap.
Can you cause certain genes to activate or not activate in the embryo? Or are you simply going through the ones that nature, quote unquote, creates and picking and finding the best ones out of the batch? Can you tailor them?
So at the moment where the tech is, we can go to right down to a single gene disorder and go and select to make sure that embryo doesn't carry that specific disease.
But you can't find it and switch it off.
No,
that comes later through epigenetics. That's a whole complicated process.
And CRISPR.
Exactly.
Yeah. I want bat wings.
That's not going to happen, Gord.
But when you can choose embryos, I don't even think the point of engineering is almost moot, because if you can create a lot of embryos, then you can just select what you'd like. So the whole point where we are now, even from a 5-day-old embryo, we can tell you the sex of the baby. And it's illegal in South Africa. But if you've got your 5 embryos and you know that they're 5 healthy ones and you've got 4 girls, is it so bad to choose the boy?
Why is this stuff illegal in South Africa? What kind of backward rules have we got in place from a bunch of people who probably don't have a lot to do with medicine? Politicians. Where did this come from?
It's an interesting question. I'm not sure. It's from the past. In most of the countries, it's illegal, except in the US and Mexico, apparently.
Really?
Yes.
And stem cell research in general is is still banned in a lot of countries, right?
Not really. It just depends where you are. So there's a lot of research going on. I think the difference is when you start using it clinically, because you got to make sure that it's, you know, it can work and you're not causing harm to anyone. So that's a completely different area.
Hmm. To play devil's advocate on the argument against this kind of stuff, what do you do with the embryos that you, because you said you can see it's sex from 5 days, it's gender from 5 days, whatever. But if that's already starting to develop, like, what happens to the ones you don't execute with? Like, now you've got little tiny baby individual snowflake people with souls that Jesus made, excuse me, and like you've got like 30 that you didn't choose. What happens to them?
Flushed down the toilet.
Yeah.
No, that's
like most men do probably on average once a day or so.
What do you do with them?
So we don't work with that. So we work with all the fertility labs that create the embryos. So we don't work in any of that. And they cryogenically freeze and store those embryos. We then, cells get biopsies from those embryos, and that's what we test to make sure which are the healthy ones. So yes, there are storage tanks with embryos waiting to be hatched. It is a bit freaky, especially if you know, you start identifying with them, like, well, you know, that's a girl, that's a boy, you've got three boys waiting to be hatched. That does freak people out.
Hatched is a amazing, cool term.
I like that.
Kind of strange.
So
cool.
Interesting, you mentioned Craig Venter earlier. So he said to me, or was a few years ago, he was already close to being able to generate a photo of what your child can look like at the age of 18 from the embryo.
That's also like that is moving so slightly cool. Away from the embryonic stuff. Like, that's really cool if there's like viable DNA cells in old remains, even if it's like very old, that you could then digitally reconstruct what this creature would have properly looked like. Because I mean, okay, like, I know there's never, if maybe very seldom, but basically never, like, viable DNA in, say, dinosaur fossils, but they find stuff in amber that's like millions of years old with some DNA in it, and you could reconstruct a 3D model of what this massive dragonfly would have been like.
So let me tell you, George Church, who's in Boston, he's like a world-renowned geneticist, he's working on what you call the de-extinction of animals, and where he's taken the DNA of the woolly mammoth and wanting to insert that into lab-grown elephant cells to try and regrow the woolly mammoth.
So imagine you could go to the zoo and see a woolly mammoth.
And dodos. Well, I would prefer it if it was like a tundra reserve of hundreds of kilometers of free roaming tundra for the mammoths to just be free on. But yes, it would be totally rad. Some people are supremely against it, but at the same time, this was not a natural extinction. I mean, humans are, but I suppose you could argue natural. But like,
we hunted
the mammoths down, and that's how humans, as far as we know, populated North and South America. So like, we killed that shit. If we can kill it, surely we have a responsibility in a sense to bring it back.
That's interesting. Wow. Just to go a little deeper into the genetics for a moment, because I seldom have people in here I can talk to about this stuff. So we know, of course, that in the DNA, in each chromosome, we have these combinations of the four nucleotides. And in those combinations, you obviously can have certain genes that switch on and off, and this is the epigenetic variation that you're talking about. But they've still got this problem trying to figure out what the supposed junk DNA is, where there are genes that appear to be inactive. There are combinations, and sometimes these could be long strings that make up a vast proportion of the chromosome, and they're not sure what the function of that DNA is. Is there any progress being made in figuring out what that stuff is?
I think they are making progress. I'm not exactly sure what all that DNA is, but it's definitely there for a reason. There's no ways that junk DNA is not.
Yeah.
It's definitely there for a reason.
I mean,
so
I've heard such interesting theories postulated that this could be a place where we record memory, or where we record culture, or we record
your spiritual nature.
I've also heard stuff that may or may not be total bollocks, but may or may not be also true, because I don't know enough, but like, where, you know, the trauma of a culture can be stored, like if you were a warring people, like the Scandinavians were very warlike for a couple thousands years and now are kind of the opposite, but like that, like a generation of war, apparently it passes down
it would make sense.
Trauma.
If you develop,
like, the PTSD
it's the epigenetics
is passed
of that
down.
Is passed down,
but
correct.
Purely logically, Kim, and correct me if I'm wrong here, if you can develop certain physical characteristics, like let's say that you get blonder the further north you go, which is exactly what happened to the Scandinavians, for example, and you get paler and you get taller. These are things that happened because of environmental factors that
are
physically recorded into the genome and are now part of that nation's appearance. It would make sense that things that are emotional or spiritual or mental would also be registered.
But, also
but does
down,
it?
Yes.
Because like, can you retrospectively change your DNA stuff? Like, can you in your life experience trauma that then causes your DNA to change so that when you pass it on next time you breed, it's different than before you experienced the trauma?
Yes.
Because of sadness or
yes, it's epigenetically passed down. So they say like our future,
it physically changes you on a cellular level when you go through some shit.
Can so our futures? We reckon we're gonna have bigger thumbs with all us.
Yeah,
thinking on our smartphones,
and that's also apparently why we are. Is it true that that's why we have small pinkies? Because we don't climb as much these days.
Don't know about that.
No, I heard that.
But that's also
we all look down at our hands,
Kim. That's also where cancer comes from. I mean, sometimes cancer is a willful mutation of the new cells that form into something which is predatory upon other cells and does damage to them. But sometimes it's also as a result of, you know, cosmic radiation or smoking.
So here we get into the interesting debate because so people get all hung up about, say, choosing the right genetics for your child, but actually genetics, and there have been lots of studies on it, only make up probably about 30% of what – you can't use genetics as an excuse. The other 70% is dependent on lifestyle and environmental factors. So, and they've done many studies on identical twins that are, you know, separated birth, reared apart, and they're completely different. Identical genetics – but it's environmental and lifestyle factors. They count about 70%. Mm. So what you're putting in your body, environmental factors, and all those affect.
So it's like nature nurture, basically.
It's
like
exactly that.
You start with the same. Everybody starts with a different canvas and a different set of paints, but then also what you do, what you do with it. Yeah.
Nature nurtures. It's a fascinating debate, that. So.
Sure. I wonder if this stuff that Craig Fent is working on, for example, and by the way, he's not South African. He's got a,
I know, everyone thinks he's South African.
He's got a South African surname, but he's probably the preeminent pioneer in this field.
Correct.
Right?
Does he go by Fenter or Venter?
Venter. Okay. I'll call him Dr. Craig Venter.
Dr. Craig Venter.
All of Hollywood's obsessed with him too. How long did you spend with him?
I've met him a few times when I was in San Diego for Singularity, actually. Mm-hmm. There for, you know, Singularity University.
Now you're a faculty member.
This was the
member.
Moment when the artificial intelligence rose up and started enslaving us. You were there for that.
So you are on the faculty.
Correct.
For Singularity. What does that mean?
So being on the faculty is, yeah, it's an amazing experience because you get to mix with everyone in the similar community and mindset, I should say, of the future and how fast the world is changing exponentially.
Have you spent any time with Diamandis?
I haven't spent time personally with him, but I've been to a lot of his seminars and group workshops.
Nice.
Yeah, so they're very, very inspirational people, and it's quite nice from a different culture where we sit in a lot of society of negativity and, you know, we're all down every day, like, geez, there's so much shit going down in our country and that. And when you actually see the power of positive change and how much we can actually do, especially here in Africa, I think it's incredible.
Well, we could cure diseases. What is a savior baby?
So a savior baby is when a family's got a child and that child is desperately ill, life-threatening disease, needs a transplant, they can't find a match. And what they then do is create a baby.
Oh.
And that happens through IVF. You create the embryos and then you test those embryos to make sure that that embryo is a genetic match for that child. The child then gets
and
born.
Doesn't have the problem.
Yes, yeah, so you check, you test for all of that. So you test out the embryos, you implant the correct one, the baby gets born, and then you can use that baby for a transplant and save your current sibling.
Oh, but I'm you sure. don't kill the savior baby.
No.
You just take like one kidney.
If you take the stem cells or whatever. You
see, then I'm sure the issue of consent.
Take one kidney.
You take the other baby, you throw it in the trash.
No.
You just bin it.
Wait, when it's five, you chop it up
That is like horrifying.
Once you've banked the organs, you've been
it. Exactly.
Then I'm sure
literally spare parts. Like what happens to your polo when it gets stolen? People have the misconception that someone else drives it around. They don't. Bits of it end up as spares in other polos.
Is the big thing around Save Your Babies then being consent of, did this child have a choice in this? And
there's a lot of ethical debate around that, yes.
Sure. Yeah, I don't think we're going to get into... We don't have time.
I can talk for weeks on this.
Wow. I can listen for weeks on
this. I would love to have you back to talk just about the ethical stuff and then also to discuss some of the new breakthroughs, because I'm sure you've got plenty more to say.
Yeah, there's some very exciting stuff
I find
coming.
It fascinating that your life experience can affect your actual genome or your genetic predispositions, and that you can then pass those traits on. So you can, by actively trying to be happy and more positive, you can create a healthier genome and pass it on to your kids. Wow. Same as your miserable bastardness can actually affect your children physically.
It's such
it's
a great
amazing.
Question. So some of our faculty actually talk quite a lot on that in the neuro space, and I find that space completely fascinating. So Adam Pantanovitz, who's one of our faculty members, he does a lot of work, you know, on the neuroscience side. But it's everything is so linked, and it's amazing just by positive mindset how much you can actually change.
Haven't they just recently found that gut health impacts really hard on mental health?
Yes.
I read Dr. Perlmutter's book on that, Brain Maker, and I found it very interesting. I hope that's not like bullshit, because it was very interesting.
No, so we're launching a test in the next few months, a microbiome test where you send in a sample of your feces.
Your stool.
And it gets analyzed, and it's all the antimicrobial.
How much stool do you need?
It really is a bit gross to talk about, but they do transplants on that. Like they do, they do transplants. Yeah. It's a gross thought.
How much do I have to send you?
Like a little piece a bar of a stool, teaspoon. Not too much. But the trick is to try catch it when you dispose of it.
Like a teaspoon of peanut butter.
Oh, come on now.
Even less.
Oh, God.
The trick is collecting it. Trust me, it's not
because,
that easy.
Okay. Because,
I don't know.
But they test it, and then what can they do about it?
So some people with seriously compromised microbiomes where you have disease, you can have microbiome transplants. So they're making these pupils, and you swallow someone else's microbiome.
I thought they actually took someone else's poop and put it in your bum.
No.
That's what I thought they
do. It's not as bad as that.
By the time it gets to that part of your gut, it's already on its way out.
See, if it's a pill, I don't know, I'm still a little bit weird about a poo pill, but I will take a poo pill. I do not want someone else's in me.
So they study, of mice, they've taken the microbiome of a skinny mouse and transplanted that into a fat mouse, and that fat mouse has become skinny.
I legitimately want to check this out because, my lifelong issues with weight, I'm convinced, are from some very underlying thing. Because I've been, it's a boring story, but I've done as much honest soul searching and, you know, looking into it as possible, and I wasn't fiddled with or anything. This has always been me from my earliest memories, and I'm convinced something is like.
Your microbiome.
Genetically, or my microbiome, or something. I'm honestly asking a question. Is there like a way that possibly people with serious issues with weight can be like cured, for lack of a better word, through all of this? Otherwise nothing's worked?
So we've seen it in animal studies.
I want thin person pupils, please.
Well, when we launch the test, you can come and give us a sample.
Kim,
test everything
while
you like.
While we're on this matter, isn't it true that they've done, over years and years of genetic research, quite a lot of investigation into the fact that much of our genome is actually contributed to us by bacteria? That actually a large proportion of the total amount of DNA we have in us has been contributed by things that lived in us. I mean, I find that pretty bizarre.
Like mitochondria are part of a symbiosis or something.
So those are energies in our cells.
Yeah, so mitochondria live inside your cells, but they almost
come from somewhere else.
They might have, but they always come from the mother, because the mother provides the egg cell, and in that are already some mitochondria. And as Kim said, they provide the energy. But they are a separate organism, effectively,
that contributes
energy to us. Their whole purpose is to make...
In the case of my mother, she also provides the egg salad. I'll just see myself out. Bye, everyone.
Thank you. Anyway, look, there's so much to cover here. I don't want to keep you longer than we can, but next time let's talk about the ethics around this because it's fascinating, and I just love the work you're doing.
Yes,
I'm amazed. You're based here in Midrand.
We're so right up the road, and I have to say that we are doing our Singularity Summit in October.
Yes.
So I promise there's some fascinating subjects.
Are you going to be there speaking?
I'm going to be speaking on designer babies, hacking sex, and playing God is my topic.
Yes. I think this is the most fascinating stuff there is.
It's very exciting.
And when you want a guinea pig, a fat person, I'm your guy.
All right.
Come to that.
How can they find out more about this? Is there a place they can go? Is there something that they can do online?
Yes, I think it's all online on the website, on the Singularity University South Africa website. There are tickets available. And honestly, I've spent fortunes over the years going to Singularity in California, which is amazing. It's a great experience. But you can get it all here in Kailami, and we attract some of the best speakers in the world. Yes.
From what? Like CompuTicket or something?
So they're online on the website. And we do attract, honestly, some of the best worldwide speakers, especially because they get some extras of going to the bush. They love coming here.
Damn right.
We get phenomenal speakers. So it's worth every cent to go to the summit here.
And so what's that website?
Singularity University South Africa.
Singularity University South Africa. Yeah, and we can get tickets from there.
Good. I'm not your nursemaid. You know how to use Google.
I could just ask. I could just get the web address.
Right. Okay. Thank you. Gord Laws, thank you very much. Kim Hewlett, what a pleasure to meet you.
Thank you very much for
this
your
time.
This
is great.
If you do develop the thin person pupil, Gord is...
Or you just want to experiment with me, I'm willing to risk being made three times as fat by this whole thing backfiring. I'm willing to risk it. You can test shit on me. You can illegally test shit on me. You can off the record illegally test shit on me. I'm excited. I might get bat wings.
This is CliffCentral.com.